What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees, and we're back for another podcast episode. The Yankees have just signed Ryan Yarbrough to a one-year, $2.5 million contract. They're going to need to set their 40-man rosters by tomorrow. We'll also get a response from Trent Grisham on whether he will accept or reject the qualifying offer. A new star free agent could get moved, or not free agent, excuse me. A new star outfielder could get moved this offseason and become an option for the Yankees. And they're one of their top options on the free agent market in Tatsuya Imai will be posted on Wednesday. We're going to talk about all of that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. I'm joined by the amazing, the one, the only Chris Drew and That's Baseball itself. I should have probably done And That's Baseball first and not have the double and. But I have two incredible baseball minds to the left of me. This is going to be a really fun show. We'll start with And That's Baseball real quick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. The stove is piping lukewarm right now. As we all know, the mid-November baseball hot stove tends to be a little bit slower. Probably a little bit after Thanksgiving, we'll start to see some real movement, but we've still got some interesting stuff to talk about today.
And Chris, how are we doing, my man?
Really good, man. You know, just catching up and excited to talk some baseball.
Yeah, new look background. Chris is in the middle of getting some stuff set up. A little bit of a long day, I would say it's been.
Yeah, dude, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, when do you get time to do something like this? And then it's always like you make a bigger mess and then you got to clean up the mess afterwards. So right now, like, the whole setup's a mess, but I'm trying to keep it presentable. And then, like, over there is my whole mess.
Hey, man, you know, you're not the only one who's been busy today because Brian Cashman, one of the few GMs not sleeping right now, he woke up from his nap. And he has signed Ryan Yarbrough to a one-year, $2.5 million contract. Very important to note, he's got $250,000 in incentives in that deal. Now, he's going to return as a undefined role kind of guy. On Fangraphs, he's going to be a fifth starter for the Yankees, but with the rosters not being complete, there's no way to know what that role will look like. Also, injuries, spring training, all of that and more. I want to kind of get your guys' immediate reactions when you saw that Ryan Yarbrough return with the Yankees. Chris, we'll start with you. Thoughts on the Yarby being back?
I like it, man. I'm a Yarby guy. You know, funky lefty, a little bit tricky. You know, not a high strikeout guy, but, you know, ate some innings. And at a pivotal time last year for the Yankees, you know, gave some really valuable innings and then had kind of his Yarby moment of the year against the Dodgers. So there was a weird stretch where he was really, really hot. But obviously things kind of, you know, things happened. And, you know, he had the injury. We kind of forgot about him. But, you know, I think it's good because, like, this year to start the year, you're going to need guys that eat innings. And I feel like he's really steady. I like Yarby a lot. So I'm thumbs up, you know, doesn't really move the needle too much. But, like, a nice, okay, good. Like, that's done. Good.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, like, just a depth signing. Someone you know can give you some innings. And the funky lefty thing, like, who knows? If we make the playoffs and he's on that roster facing Ohtani, that's the type of guy that gets Ohtani out. So he does have a little bit of a niche usage in terms of actually getting big outs. But yeah, we're not paying him that much, and he's going to eat some innings early in the year. I don't see any really downside to this.
I'd have to agree. And in the conversation of funky lefties, Ryan Yarbrough had 5 pitches he used at least 11% of the time. Lefties actually outperformed righties this past season. There have been conversations not only about the year of the mix, but also the fact that left-handed pitchers had been outperforming their right-handed counterparts by a lot larger margins over the last year and a half. So I do think having a guy like Yarbrough on the roster as depth is important. Now, the question I want to kind of give you guys about Yarbrough, and I think this is an important litmus test for how we feel about this roster and how we feel about how active they'll be this winter. Do you believe Ryan Yarbrough will make more appearances in 2026 as a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher? Not innings pitched, just appearances to kind of keep this simple-ish. And That's Baseball. We'll start with you.
God willing, it'll be as a reliever. If he's making more appearances as a starter, I think that's probably an issue. Means more injuries or guys coming back from injuries slower than we would have hoped. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in a starting role early on in the year. And even if we do sign someone like Imai, Imai would be coming from Japan, and he hasn't really thrown much on normal rest, so I wouldn't be surprised if they have Yarbrough get some spot starts now and then just to extend him a little bit. But yeah, if hopefully he gets a few starts in April, May, and then we don't really need him out of the rotation as much later in the year, but who knows with pitching injuries.
I'm kind of in the same boat.
I don't really disagree. I think he's going to end up making more relief appearances. I think that's the hope. I would also like to add with Ryan Yarbrough, I view him as a get-me-through-162 guy, a floor raiser. the Yankees needed 9 different guys to make at least 6 starts this past year. They had 11 total pitchers get the starting nod through the 162 season. And I'll be honest, I think given how injured they were to start the year in spring training, you find out no Cole for the year. Schmidt is set back, heels out for essentially half the year, ended up being more than half the year. I think you got more than what you needed volume-wise from your rotation, but you need a lot of starting pitching in this league. The Dodgers, I mean, I said this kind of off record, but if the Dodgers had signed Ryan Yarbrough, everyone would be going, oh my gosh, the Dodgers, they just keep adding guys. I mean, oh my, they just don't care. They're so good with depth. You need at least, in my opinion, 10 guys who can make a start for you throughout the year. Not saying 10 guys off rip, but 10 guys throughout the year are going to need to make starts for you. So I do think it's important to have depth. I think Yarbrough, I liked Yarbrough. He's fun. He's cool. How many sub 90 mile per hour pitchers do we have in this league? But
and
with
it didn't,
Yarbrough's
and it, real
time,
quick, it didn't always feel like a punt start too when he pitched. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I really can appreciate that. Cause like when Stroman went out there, when Cookie went out there, it's like, like this feels like a punt. Okay. I'll see you guys tomorrow. But there were times where like Yarby made starts. And I was like, okay, like I kind of feel good about this, little funky, little quirky. Mm-hmm. And then there were also times where he came in and saved Will Warren and like kind of salvaged some games that kind of went south as a long man. So I like Yarby a lot. I just wanted to add that note because when he started, it just didn't feel like a punt the same way it did when other guys started.
Yeah. That game against Tampa where Warren just didn't have it, he really did save his bacon that day. And yeah, I'm looking at the Yankees roster resource and like Alan Winans, I'd rather have Yarbrough starting the game than him. Like there's a few depth guys who you could do worse than Yarbrough.
Yarbrough was in the 59th percentile whiff rate. The fact that he can miss a bat is so vital in this. I'm not saying he's a bat misser, but the fact that he can do it on occasion is a big separating factor from him and let's say Marcus Stroman, Carlos Carrasco. The depth in Arsenal, he can actually throw multiple pitches reliably, effectively, 3 different fastball shapes, a breaking ball, a changeup. I think that's really all you need in your repertoire. And again, the Yankees are not asking him to take the ball in game 2 of the postseason. They're asking him to take the ball as it was mentioned by that, and that's baseball. If Imai is signed, you need somebody to skip a start for him. If you need him to be just a guy you throw in there because there's an injury. And honest to God, guys, we're one injury away still from Alan Winans being in the rotation open the year. This is not a diss against Alan Winans. I'm sure he's a great guy, but I don't want to be one injury away from Alan Winans. I don't. I just don't want to be in that scenario. Before we signed Yarbrough, we were one injury away from Elmer Rodriguez Cruz versus Brendan Beck fighting for a rotation spot. And no, just no, I'm not for that right now, guys. I'm just not.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think that's a good little segue you've created for us into the ERC debate. So if you want to hop right in with that, you can go ahead.
I have to mention one thing, though. Elmer Rodriguez Cruz is actually not Elmer Rodriguez Cruz anymore. MLB has him listed as Elmer Rodriguez now. So, yeah, I know, Chris, I know. I can see your eyes. I actually think it's an oral loss. I think he lost.
Yeah, I don't think I like that. Is that messed
up? I don't.
He was good as a 3-name guy.
Yeah, the three names feel different in sports, man.
Now it's just Elmer Rodriguez, but he is eligible to be placed on the 40-man roster. I guess this is technically bigger news than the name change, but I disagree. The Yankees are going to have a list of Rule 5 guys, and unlike, I'd say, 15 to 20 other organizations in baseball, they have to very carefully select who they put on it because they usually have more guys than they can fit on their 40-man. Whether that means we'll see a trade tomorrow, a trade tonight, I don't know, but I think Spencer Jones and Elmer Rodriguez Cruz are going to be there. Are there any underrated guys that you guys have seen that are Rule 5 eligible that you would say should be on the 40-man roster? Chris, we'll switch it up and start with you.
I mean, maybe not saying he should be, but I am curious kind of what the outlook is on Chase Hampton. He's a guy that I thought his stuff was nasty. I mean, he I think a fantastic pitcher, but the issue is like the injuries add so much volatility. I wonder if they will try to create room for him or if any team will touch him or, you know, if they just like will take the risk on the Rule 5 side. He's just someone that kind of I made videos on previously that I really enjoyed watching, kind of had stuff that I liked and has, you know, enough of a pitch mix and enough overpowering stuff that I'm kind of hopeful for. I thought that last year, if he didn't get hurt, he was a guy that we could have seen late, like kind of like on that Cam Stutler timeline. And obviously that kind of changed. So I'm just keeping an eye out on him. But other than that, nothing really. I mean, the two big ones that matter the most to me that are going to be on the 40-man are ERC and Spencer Jones. So,
yeah, I mean, you have like a TJ Rumfield who might get drafted and end up. So, like, I don't think we're going to need to put him on. I don't think we need to protect him, really. If someone picks him, so be it. I don't really see him as a legitimate MLB full-time player. So if someone wants to take him and put him on their bench, maybe it's going to happen. But I don't think he fits on our 40-man right now.
For me, the guy who I think gets put on as the third is Harrison Cohen, just because they need you just always need arms, and he was pretty successful in AAA, higher walk rate than you'd like, but a lot of swing and miss. I do think Jones and Cruz are locks, though. Those are the two guys that I would bet any sum of money I could possibly own on them being on the 40-man roster. I do think Rumfield is more of a I-think-he-gets-traded guy. In the case of Hampton, I think there's an interesting case for him to be left off of it, just because a team would have to put him on their MLB roster once they activate him from the IL, and I don't think any team would do that right now. But I do think next year that'll be a big, big conversation, because not a lot of time to pitch, not a lot of time to recover from TJS, and you've got to show that you're ready to be a big leaguer. And you've got to be, but you also can't be good enough that teams would view as a big leaguer. But it's a weird window. Kind of Brendan Beck's in this window too, where he's good enough to get picked in the Rule 5 draft, but he's not good enough to make the Yankees 26-man roster. So he's probably going to get picked in the Rule 5 draft. So I do wonder where things go from there. But with Jones and Cruz officially, or not yet, but probably officially being put on this roster in the next 24 hours, if you were to bet on one of these two guys coming up first, who would you bet on and why? And that's baseball. We'll start with you.
I think this is an interesting question, because I could see it going either way. It'll probably depend on the guys that we end up signing this year. But if I had to guess, I'd probably say Elmer Rodriguez ends up on the big league roster first. And that's just because pitching injuries happen. I'm sure, like, we're going into the year with three starters on the IL. And then you could always anticipate one or two more in spring training. So I could see a universe where he breaks camp with the team. Obviously, that wouldn't be optimal, but I think that's more likely to happen than Spencer Jones breaking camp with the team, because I do think we're going to bring in at least Bellinger and then maybe one other platoon outfielder. And if we go into the season with four or five outfield options, I think it's less likely that one of them is going to go down early in the season. And I think ERC, they're both kind of equally ready, I think. They probably each need a season or half a season more to prove themselves, but if push comes to shove, they'll both be available to come up this year.
That surprised me. I thought we were both going to go on the Spencer Jones side of things. So I think Elmer Rodriguez Cruz needs, like, a significant amount of time in AAA. Like, I would just like to see it. I think that, like, obviously Spencer Jones is closer to being ready, so I think we'll see him first. But I think that ERC long-term will probably be a better pro than Spencer will. And so I wouldn't be mad at either. But I thought, you know, for me, I just – in my head, it's a no-brainer. Okay, Spencer Jones is going to break camp with the team. I just think that he's kind of on that path.
For me, I think with Jones, so the two arguments in my head are, for Cruz, I trust him more to be a good big leaguer. Sick. I trust him more to be a good big leaguer. That's why I pick him one. But for Jones, there is a much more, like, the role of left-handed outfielder exists on the Yankee roster already, and they're going to build their roster around left fielder who's left-handed, center fielder who's likely left-handed. So they're probably going to have a fourth outfielder who's a right-handed hitter. Bellinger, if he returns, playing him in left field is probably optimal for his defensive output and his total values and contributions to the roster. I guess it comes down to spring training, right? We're going to see if Cruz makes any additions to his repertoire. We'll see if Jones does anything to stand out in camp. I will always bet on a pitcher over a position player when it comes to Yankee prospects. That's just kind of how I view things. I think they're better at getting pitchers to translate to the MLB level versus hitters. But that's just, again, my assumption. So sorry, that's a very long way of saying I will roll with Cruz. Elmer Rodriguez. Oh, man, Elmer Rodriguez. I can't. That's going to be tough to get used to for me. ERC is a good nickname, and now it's ER. And ER is kind of an ominous nickname, I feel like. But I would roll with him. But it's not – Jones is very close for me on above him for MLB readiness, just because, well, more time in AAA. That matters a lot to me.
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you. Like, I think we all agree that Elmer Rodriguez will be a better pro. I just get the sense that the Yankees want Spencer Jones up first. And I don't know if they want Rodriguez up right now.
I think I understand your point. I think if we were – to go into the season with the number five starting pitching job open and the center field job open, I think Jones more likely to win it. But I also think we're going to fill in those positions. All of those positions are going to be filled in going into the year. So I think it's more likely, if we're talking about one game, I think Rodriguez probably shows us a spot start or two before Jones can come up, because they usually don't promote the position player prospects until they have a full time role for them on the roster. So even if we have if we have a situation where Jason Dominguez is on paternity leave, like they're not going to probably call up Jones as the next guy up. They'll probably do something else with the position players. But yeah, I don't know.
I think it's interesting, though, because this offseason's a good litmus test for how the Yankees view Spencer Jones. If they go into 2026, and it's almost interesting, I think if they were to use him as a player that comes up when a guy has paternity leave, that tells you what they think of the player in a negative light. Because if you look at the top-rated guys they've done that to, Yorbit Vivas, Oswald Peraza is probably the most notable guy on a top 100 list who came up without a full-time job ready for him in 2022. That's not a good sign. So yeah,
I think they did that with Floreal too, back when everyone was hyping him up.
Yeah, Floreal only came up in 2020 as a doubleheader guy, I believe, against the Mets. So it's an ominous sign. In 21, he came up as well, and it was only for about 10 days, I think, when there were some COVID things going on with the Yankee roster. So I would say that for Jones, I think you've got to be sold on Rodriguez coming up first, because if they were to call up Jones... And pitcher injuries are different. You're never out for like 5 days. You're out for 2 weeks usually at minimum. And it's like a 2 week shutdown, 2 week build up, take it slow, take it careful. Oh, this guy's going to be back in August. He's back early September, something of that nature. I also don't think it's a Yankee specific thing. Blake Snell was minorly injured and then didn't pitch for like more than half the year. So I think that's just a pitcher thing. If you're a pitcher, you're just going to be hurt for way longer or on the shelf for longer than people think. Now, one other note with the 40-man roster is that they may have to create room, or if they want to add guys beyond what their 40-man roster would let them do without subtracting guys, that could create some interesting situations here. Is there anyone on the roster that you would be, I wouldn't want to use the word certain, but would expect to see them cut tomorrow or think they could get cut tomorrow from the roster? And I'll start with Chris on this one.
No one comes to mind for me, but I'd love in that space ball to help me out on this one.
I don't know about tomorrow, but I could see within the next few months or before this next season, someone like Ian Hamilton or Scott Efros being either traded or cut off this roster. Just because, I don't know, I feel like they've kind of run their course with this organization. Kind of like, I feel like Ian Hamilton right now, unless he comes in this spring and he's like figures out his command that he hasn't had in years, I feel like he's very much in the Ron Marinaccio camp from a couple of years ago, where it looked good for a little bit, but he just hasn't put it all together to solidify his role with this team. And I could see him, I could see this past year being his last year with the Yankees.
I think the option guys are safe. Javier Sandridge, Scott Efros, they're safe. They have options for next year, so I think they're good. But I do think Ian Hamilton's on cut watch. Zero options left. And that options for a contender are so much more important than people think. If you think Ian Hamilton is marginally better than Scott Efros, and I think I'd rather have Ian Hamilton on my roster than Scott Efros. Doesn't matter. If you don't have options, you're just a lame duck waiting for your spot to get let up. I would put Brandon Shoemake in this. No options left. Yorbit Vivas, no options left. Vivas, I think, has a better chance to stay for now. But I think Shoemake is the guy I'm looking at for tomorrow and saying I don't know if he's going to still be a Yankee after tomorrow. But that's depressing. I don't like talking about guys who are gone. So I wanted to keep that one the brief and segue and get the hell out of here on that topic. Qualifying offer deadline is also tomorrow. It's actually earlier than the 40-man. So the 40-man must be set by 6 p.m. The qualifying offer, it's 4 p.m., all of this Eastern time. The Yankees will know from Trent Grisham whether he will accept or reject the offer. ATB, get me started here. Trent Grisham, accepting or rejecting the qualifying offer?
I'm going to say rejecting. I've said rejecting the entire time. The early reports are saying that he's likely to reject, and I don't really... I think it's too much of a gamble for him to accept it and then hopefully has another... This past year is a career year, so... If he's confident he can have a repeat of this year and then hit the market with no draft pick compensation, then who knows? Maybe he does accept. But I think from his point of view, it makes more sense to hit the market right now. He's the third best available outfielder on the free agent market behind Bellinger and Tucker. So, and there's going to be a lot of teams bidding on those two top options. So when those two guys are gone off the board and there's four or five teams looking for an outfielder, they're going to be bidding on Trent Grisham. So he's going to have a chance to make some life-changing money long-term this offseason.
I mean, what do you think he's going to get? Like 3 years, 4 years, probably?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Youth is going to help him for that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I never thought he was going to accept it. I mean, this whole time, I felt like the Yankees had to have good feel and know that he would reject it and they would get that draft pick and kind of, you know, be able to go their separate ways. Because, again, like 30 home runs, like, chances are very slim that he does that next year. And I don't think the Yankees, if they felt like he was going to accept the offer, would even, you know, mess around with this kind of thing. So they got a pretty good feel on it, I think. I think he rejects the offer. And like MF Baseball said, like, you know, top three, top four outfielder. In terms of value on the market. I mean, do you think he has more value than like Harrison Bader on the market?
Yes.
I think, yeah.
I think he's better. I just think he's a better player.
The injury risk also. I mean, you're talking about a guy who can't stay healthy for his life in Harrison Bader. And the other thing with Harrison Bader that matters here is how I think Trent Grisham has a higher chance is going to be closer to his 2025 OPS than Harrison Bader will. And I think teams would bet on that as well, just based on the underlying metrics. Maybe I'm not privy to information that teams have access to, but just kind of, you know, eyeballing it from the expected OPS, the spray angles, the spray chart. I'll trust Grisham.
Yeah, I'll just say it. I think Harrison Bader is a fake good player, and he's tricked us before, and I don't want to be tricked again by him. I want him to stay as far away from us as possible.
No,
frankly.
And I wasn't even talking for as from a standpoint. Like I, you know, it's funny. I live in the Akron Cleveland area, and I hear a lot of Cleveland people like clamoring for either Trent or Harrison Bader. That's kind of one of the fun things they got going on. They're getting neither, but it's just one of those.
Yeah, I mean, if I need an outfielder, I definitely prefer Grisham.
Yeah,
if you're gonna date Harrison Bader, you don't marry Harrison Bader.
Yeah, I agree.
You get him at the deadline because he's got half a year left of control, and you don't have to make a long-term commitment to him. That's what you do with Harrison Bader. You don't give him 3 or 4 years and hope that works out for you. That's the way I view it. In the case of Grisham as well, with the qualifying offer, the Yankees are stingy with qualifying offers. They don't hand that out like candy. They hand that out like, oh man, we really don't want to be stuck with this guy for next year.
I mean, Glaber didn't even get it last year, which was a little bit surprising to me.
Jameson Taillon didn't get one and then signed a, 4-year, $80 million contract?
Yeah, that was probably a misread by us, not going to lie.
But they were probably so worried about him taking the contract.
Yeah.
And that they're very careful with this. So once they handed it to him, I was like, yeah, he's rejecting it. And there's no reason for him to, again, take a 1-year gamble to try and reset your market. I don't think his market doesn't even have to be that strong for it to make no sense for him. For a Matt Chapman, for an Alex Bregman, we're talking about, oh, I want hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay, it's a little bit different. Grisham's not getting $100 million in any universe. There's not a world where he gets $100 million. He'd have to hit 40 home runs next year for that to be the case, I think, because he's not a center fielder anymore to a lot of teams, at least long-term. He's a corner outfielder. Those guys don't get paid to the degree that premium position guys do.
Yeah, I was thinking to your point about the Yankees extending him the offer. I think it shows that even if he were to accept it, I think the Yankees consider that a okay enough value to be worth it for them to risk it. So I think that shows how they value him as a player overall. That's probably indicative of how the market values him, which is probably indicative of him being valuable. So I don't think he's going to accept it.
And I will be gladly taking that fourth round pick because there's a world where the Yankees don't actually give up any draft picks in free agency, which if they don't sign Kyle Tucker, that's what I want. If they don't sign Kyle Tucker, I don't want a single draft pick given up in this free agent class. There's not a single player I'm doing that for. Michael King, I'm not giving up draft picks for. I'm absolutely not giving up draft picks for Framber Valdez. I'm not doing that for anybody on this market. Sorry. We signed Zach Gallen, I will be the angriest I've ever been about adding a player to the roster.
Oh, I'm a Gallen hater as well.
It's not even that I'm a hater. Once the qualifying offer was offered, it's like, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not even a chance. I was like sour grapes on him, kind of like I was on Goldschmidt entering the year, where I didn't really want to sign him. But when he signed, I was like, all right, whatever. Gallen would be, if there was no qualifying offer, who cares? And I was going to ask you guys which players you would sign despite the qualifying offer. My answer is like, absolutely no. I don't know if there's anybody you guys were like, you know what?
Well, Kyle Tucker.
I was supposed to note without Kyle Tucker because I would sign Kyle Tucker, but I would not sign anybody else. No one with a 10-foot pole. I kind of hate this free agent class for us, really.
I have an interesting one for you guys. I actually have an interesting two.
Go ahead.
Two starting pitchers, Dylan Cease and Framber Valdez. I think both of those are in the iffy category.
For the Yankees, Framber is a hard no for me. I do not want to pay Framber Valdez.
Mm-hmm.
Cease is a give you the scenario. If it's his market is like, oh, I'm going to sign the Bregman deal, I'm going to do an opt-out year, yes, I will burn draft picks for that because I'm essentially paying draft picks to not have to lock you up long-term. That's good with me. But that's like the only scenario where I'd do it for Cease. I wouldn't give Cease 5 or 6 years. That's mm-hmm. me personally.
So you're like, if we're getting towards the end of the offseason, some of these guys are still available and their markets are down, like kind of like what Pivetta signed last year with the Padres, and you'd be yeah. more interested? Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat.
For Cease. CFC. Circumstantial for Cease. There we go.
I could get talked into the Cease thing, but initially, no.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan of – I think Framber is just – I think he's such a headache. Like, in New York –
he's an asshole.
Dude, in New York, every pitch he would throw would be magnified. The Houston Astros not liking Framber thing, or Framber being a nuisance or a head case, is not new. It's not new. Every Astro fan is like, yeah, this has been a thing for years. He's been a punk for years. There was, like, an incident where – I think it was they like said he complains about like the ball he uses too much, whatever it may be. He's just a whiner. That's like
the
thing.
We had the Trent Grisham thing, didn't we?
Yeah.
Right, but that's what exposed everybody to mm-hmm. him. In New York, yeah. that like he would not be under the radar doing that.
Oh yeah, you'd have a million WFAN segments the next day after that.
Dude, he would I genuinely think like he couldn't I don't believe in this usually, but I don't think he can do New York. He just can't. Not just the Yankees. Not the Mets. Can't be the Mets or the Yankees. He can't do New York.
All right, so my next question would be, let's say no one's signing him. It's February. How low would his contract offers have to be? Like what would be the max contract you'd give him, knowing that you have to give up draft pick compensation? Like, is there a world where you do the Cease, like, pillow type deal with him, or no? Are you completely out on him?
I don't see him. I guess I've never really considered it because I never thought he'd be a candidate for that because, like, the age, and he's like 32, yeah. So I'm just in my head, and like, he's going to cash out. A 1+1, I don't. It's just for me, it's so tough for me to, like, get my head around it, get me to believe he can do it for a year.
Yeah.
And I think the toughest thing for me is. I don't know, man. Like, I, at that point, do trade for a guy. Do whatever you can. Like, I wouldn't – if all your options are off the table, Framber or no starting pitcher, yes, I'll take Framber.
Mm-hmm.
But you think
he'd be awful in New York for a year is what you're saying. Like, you think it'd be so bad so quickly that it's not worth it.
If it's him or nobody, I'm taking Framber.
Okay.
Like, I don't – like, I'm never a believer in I will do nothing over making my team obviously better. Framber is a – yes, your team obviously gets better guy. I just don't – I'm very much against what that personality type would be like here. And I'm also pretty against committing long-term money to him. And I'm also iffy about – I'm very selective about any money we give in the rotation at this point. We are 1 year away from Skubal's free agency. We have good pitchers in our rotation. We have a pipeline of MILB to MLB talent that has become pretty effective for us. In the last 5 years, we produced starting pitchers that are either A – have had number one caliber seasons, Michael King, guys who have flashed the ability to be number two, number three starters in Schmidt, and I would say Schlittler's in that. And in Warren's case, it's an unfinished story, but he's already an MLB starter. So, and Luis Heel also showed the flashes of being a two or a three. I just don't think he's that anymore. So that's in the last 5 years. I don't know if I'm missing anybody, but I like that pipeline of talent, given, again, these guys trade everyone. They don't have good draft picks ever. We lose draft picks for breathing. Like, it's a pretty awful system to try and accumulate draft talent or prospect talent, whatever it may be. So that's why I'm hesitant with any money I hand out, and that's why I'm hesitant with Mr. Framber Valdez here.
Yeah, I think I agree overall.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm this much of a hater because 2 years ago, I was a huge Framber guy. He's Dominican. That's like the list of it. He's Dominican. Son, he's good at baseball.
Is he pitching for the WBC team this year?
See, if he doesn't, I'm stamped. Like, no, not even a 1+1 could get me to want him. But if he pitches for the WBC team, I'm a wait and see.
Because what would the number be for you in Mets baseball?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it much. Let's see. His projection right now, the crowdsource projection, is 5 years, 140. It's like, Jesus Christ, not even close to that. Like, it'd have to be like a two or three, like $60 million at most, probably. Like a $20 million AAV shorter term.
He's just not someone you can... If we were Fireside Cubs, this is different. If we are Fireside, I don't know, Brewers.
I think, like, Blue Jays are a good fit for,
yes,
for Framber. They've brought, like, he's not exactly a Kevin Gausman, but he's a ground ball guy, and he's already in his 30s. They've given out this type of contract before.
He's better than Gausman and Yesavage, I think, for 26. Mm-hmm. If I were to project, I think he's better. And I also think the Toronto media is just way less harsh on these kinds of things. The Toronto, how do I describe this? And I don't mean this insultingly. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying it for what it is. Toronto broadcast, the Toronto press box will have people cheering when the Blue Jays score. That's not the case in New York. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I'm not saying that
this is a New York thing, not a Toronto thing. Yeah.
But I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying that's how it is. Like, if you are a good pitcher for the Blue Jays, the guy who is asking you questions in your press conferences is going to be like, oh, I like you.
Yeah.
You're good. I like you. I'm a fan of this team. I like you, man. Not in New York, where it's, I might have grown up a Yankees fan, but I'm a Yankees fan. So, you know, we're just kind of miserable you-know-whats all the time, even though we're the Yankees fan. Like, it's kind of an interesting concept. But anywho, I just think that's a different environment. I think that's why Shohei was considering going there. I think that's why Sasaki kept them in it. I don't think it was because, oh yeah, I just happen to like the Colts. No, I think the media plays a huge role in that for sure. But with that being said, is there any other, like, is there anyone else to QL? I thought of King for like a second, but I think that's just nostalgia for me. I don't even think I can know when I'm being a nostalgia guy. I don't think I'm a King guy.
Yeah,
on QL.
I'm pretty sure King is going to accept the QL.
I would if I was him.
Because he's, like, coming off the injury, I feel like that's a perfect, you're going to be making $22 million just to prove it. I think that's good, because then regardless of what happens, he's going to get rid of the QO option next year. So he'll be able to hit the market without draft pick compensation. It makes a lot of these guys, like Gallen's probably going to accept it. I don't know about Imanaga, it depends on his market, but he's not a good fit for us either way. But yeah, some of these guys who are the starters that are looking at shorter term deals will probably accept it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, and for King, you also know you're getting reps. The Padres rotation is not good. I think the leash for reps is important here, too. If you're signing a one-year deal, you need to be somewhere where you're going to get, from April to September, you're going to get the ball every fifth day.
Mm-hmm.
Not a guarantee if you're King and you go to the Yankees or you go to the Mets or you go to the Red Sox, where those teams might be able to pull the plug on you in June or July. And that's where you kind of, even if you're getting pushed to the bullpen, like, that's not good. Because half a year, I think we can say confidently half a year, sometimes your second half is just so good or so bad you forget about the first half. Numbers change a lot in the span of 2 or 3 months. But looking at somebody who could change teams, you know, I tried to force a segue there.
That was weak.
Yeah, that wasn't very good. Okay, I got a better one. Okay. No, I don't have a better one, actually.
Michael King. We're going to go from Michael King to the King of Minnesota.
Yeah, I was going to say King Bucks, but I was like, no, it's King Tuck. That just doesn't work. But I do think that works. Byron Buxton could be made available for trade. Now, let me kind of specify what the situation would be here. According to The Athletic, this was Dan Hayes of The Athletic. If the Twins tear it down, Byron Buxton could consider waiving his no-trade clause. So it's not that he's demanding a trade. It's that he could consider waiving his no-trade clause. We don't know the teams in his no-trade clause. My understanding of the situation is there are specific teams he'd want to go to. I don't know if the Yankees are one of them or a team he's firmly against going to. But with that being said, I'm going to start with AmNats Facebook because I know this is your guy. Byron Buxton, sell the Yankee fan on why the Yankees should be in on him.
I mean, this dude can play. I've been a Byron Buxton fan for so long. And it took him, his reputation early in his career, he was the first overall pick. It took him years and years and years before he finally put it all together around 2021. But even then, he was just hurt all the time. 21 and 22, his rate stats are like next level. He, like, 21, if he played an entire 162 games, he was easily the MVP. He was putting up like better rate stats than like Mike Trout had ever put up in center field. Elite center field defender, great power. He'll strike out a lot, but not to the point where it's crazy. And his strikeouts are down from where they were at his highest. Just like pull up his Baseball Savant page and just take a look. And then also think about, he just had his season with his most plate appearances ever. So he's finally found a way to manage that, his body, in terms of when to play, when to DH, when to take his foot off the gas on the bases. So I think he has more, he's more in tune with that than he's ever been. And while the rate stats aren't quite as insane as they were, like coming right off of COVID, he's still, he put up 5 WAR this year. 5 WAR in 126 games. That's a superstar player. And we would benefit from that in center field, especially since we need a righty outfielder.
I'm glad you brought up the 21 year. That's one of the most ridiculous years for a center fielder, maybe ever. I mean, we talked about, like, he just came off a 5 WAR season this last year. It's, we put that superstar territory. Who was it, 21? It was 4.9 WAR in 61 games.
That's ridiculous. That's like he's the Eric Davis of this generation.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, all-time talent. If you can get him in New York, awesome. That'd be incredible. I don't think he would waive his no-trade clause to go to New York. I hope I'm wrong, but I'd be willing to give up a pretty significant amount to land Byron Buxton. Again, at least you pointed out last year, kind of it did a lot more of the responsible center fielding last year. Yes. And a lot more of the responsible base running last year to kind of save himself. Now, do you get like the same like supernova level player? No, but like the B plus version of Byron Buxton is still better than every other center fielder, so it doesn't really matter. But again, absolutely, like that's a fit. It works. It lines up with Judge's prime. I mean, it all of a sudden would give you Judge and Buxton in center. That'd be absolutely absurd. And if you obviously re-sign Bellinger, you're talking about likely the best outfield in the sport. So I'm sold. I'm in. Thanks, and that's baseball. I'm in. Let's go.
The other thing with Buxton that is important to note is that even if you want to say, well, he's going to miss X amount of games, he still puts up. These are not prorated 4 WAR seasons. These are, no, he had a 4 WAR season.
Yeah.
Wins above replacement is 4 wins above replacement. That is what you would reasonably, I wouldn't know if the word is reasonable, but like realistic but optimistic way of viewing Cody Bellinger in 2026. I think a 4 WAR season is slightly behind what you would expect from Tucker in 2026 as well. Buxton on a per rate basis is better than any of those players. If healthy in the postseason, I would want Byron Buxton over Kyle Tucker or Cody Bellinger for that environment, not because of previous postseason production, because I think he's a better player on a game-to-game basis. The other thing that's important to know is the contract. Even if you reset it with the AAV, which you have to do when you trade the player, it's a $15.1 or $2 million luxury tax hit. That is ridiculous. Yeah. The big knock on acquiring Luis Robert is that it costs you $20 million for that year.
It's a steal, dude. You could put this guy in center and have Bellinger in left re-signed, and it would probably total up to a little bit more than what Kyle Tucker is going to get on his own per year. So if this guy's available, I think that's the best way to go in the outfield. Obviously, it's going to depend if he wants to play in New York. He's an Atlanta guy, so I wouldn't be surprised if he says it's Atlanta or bust for me. But if he's willing to play in New York, we have to be the New York team that goes out and gets him, because this guy is so, that's a Hall of Fame talent in a body that cannot handle how good he is.
I will also say with Buxton, it kind of works with the already existing talent on the roster. Jones and Dominguez are both guys who project to be better against right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching. Not saying that you're platooning Buxton or whatever, but you're going to need to give him the stay-in treatment. Every 4 or 5 days, you're not playing that day, regardless of whether we have an off day or not. If it's, and the more likely outcomes you're facing a righty, I mean, over half the pitchers in the league are right-handed pitchers. You can work this out during the week and say, all right, we're facing a righty on Friday. We'll have Buxton play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Put Dominguez out there on Friday, or we give Stanton a day, and Dominguez is playing twice a week in that 4 or 5 game stretch. And guys are going to get hurt. That's the other thing. Stan's going to miss time. Buxton's going to miss time. You don't have to end Jason Dominguez's time as a Yankee to add Buxton. That's a really important part of that puzzle for me, where I don't have to trade Dominguez. I just could if the right trade opens itself up to me. That's my only pushback with even my own pushing of this two outfield narrative of I don't want the Yankees to be no leverage on a Jason Dominguez trade. You're just going to have to trade him and get nothing back. So I guess I would ask this, and I'm going to start with Chris on this. If you were to make a trade proposal to the Twins, the Byron Buxton says, I will play for the Yankees. The Twins say, all right, you're still going to have to make us an offer that we like.
Yeah.
What are you offering?
It's funny because you brought Dominguez, like, wouldn't he be included in this deal? Like,
maybe.
If you get Byron Buxton, like, my thought process is, oh, we're sending Dominguez out. It's kind of where I would start. And so, like, anything centered around Jason Dominguez, like, I mean, I think you go. He's got the upside. He's got the athleticism. I mean, obviously, still young, only 22 years old. Like, I think that, like, starting with him as the star prospect or, you know, young piece to kind of ship out, I think, I don't see a world where you're able to land Buxton without at least sending him or Spencer Jones out.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think it would be one of those two would be the centerpiece on the position player side of things. And then you probably need to add another really good arm, like a Ben Hess maybe, or a Cunningham, whoever they like in our system. And then maybe even like a Luis Gil, someone who's in the big leagues and they can pick up now. And then maybe if he plays well, they can flip him for more value in a year or two. So I think it would take a serious package. And I definitely do think it would take at least one of our top two outfield prospects or outfield young outfielders. So what do you think, Ryan?
I think the big selling point for me too in this is if the Twins are like, hey, we traded everybody, Buxton doesn't want to be here, he only wants to be a Yankee, you're not bidding with other teams.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's kind of like
that's true.
It's like when the old posting system where you just have to bid to then get exclusive negotiating rights with the player. When you meet their demands, it's not like you're getting sized up with other demands. When you meet their demands, they're yours. So I do think that's part of this for me. And I think, yes, it'll have to be one of your, you know, top three, four-ish pitching prospects, one of your major league ready or major league outfielders. It depends on what the Twins like. It depends on what they want. But I do think if they're like, if Buxton comes up to them and says, you traded Pablo Lopez, you traded Joe Ryan, I don't want to be here. I don't. I want to go. I didn't know it was going to be this bad with the tear down. I'd like to go. And, you know, please do right by me. Send me to the Yankees. You know, there's not a lot I'm not doing.
You're a Twin.
It's also like, dude,
one for one.
Could you imagine how cold it would be to like, I just want to, like, there are a few things that could get me truly hype. And I'm not saying that in like a negative way. I just say it in the sense of, I usually have the view that the Yankees are going to make additions in the off season. If I woke up to a tweet at like 9:30 in the morning from Dan Hayes, MLB, breaking, Byron Buxton has requested to the Minnesota Twins to be traded to the Yankees, I'd be like, oh my God. Well, oh my, I'd go crazy. I'd go nuts.
I think the closest thing to this hypothetical that we're making in our heads right now is when Stanton rejected the trade. I think it was to St. Louis or something. He was like, I only want to go to the Dodgers or the Yankees. And I was like, oh shit, it's real now. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we get a scenario. I think if Buxton's willing to come to us, he'd probably be willing to go to LA and Atlanta as well. So we probably would be bidding with a few other teams, at least a few other good teams with farm systems. But Hopefully he just loves New York so much that he has to come here and live here for a couple of years. So who knows?
I do think while there are downsides, I don't think people like playing with the New York media. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I've never heard like I genuinely enjoy when, you know, so-and-so on unnamed radio station insert here insults me personally and says I'm a loser because I made one bad play in the middle of June. That is probably exhausting, but I do think Aaron Judge is a big draw. I do think people want to play with Aaron Judge. I'm sorry. I don't see how you wouldn't, as a position player, go, man, if I play next to Aaron Judge, what are my numbers looking like? What is my life looking like? You know, I think there's an appeal to that, and people want to win. And whether people like to hear this or not, like, I saw this with the Paul Skeen stuff, which obviously Paul Skeen is going to be a Yankee, where it's like, well, it's not different. The Yankees went 1-15 years. Like, you're a moron. You're a moron. If you think going to the Yankees isn't one of the five best places you could go right now to win a championship if you're a star player, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You're just stupid. There's no saving you. There is no saving you. There is no there. I can't educate you on that. If
this
you're going
to
start rattling off
of you,
teams,
Ryan, by the way, this is my favorite version. Like,
I mean, I'm sorry that, like, I don't know why that, like, randomly became a thing that I got upset when I saw it, and I just don't care to say anything because I'm not going to convince,
right,
you know, dumb person.
Like, your mind's made up. There's no point in arguing. But this right here is my favorite version. Like, if you honestly, like, we can't help you. You're an idiot. I got you.
No, like, you can't. But you can't. If someone's going to go, I'd rather – well, the Red Sox won a World Series in 2018. Therefore, you should rather go there than be a Yankee. It's like, who's even there from that team?
The Nationals won 2019. Everyone's – chomping at the bid to go to DC now?
Yeah, dude. I mean, they have a more recent World Series title than the Mets. I guess you'd want to be a National more than you'd want to be a Met. Why play with Juan Soto and Francisco Lindor? You could play with Keeper Ruiz. And is Riley Adams even there? I don't. That's a weird name pull to drop, considering they have Dylan Cruz and Abramson. Yeah. But I just know Adams because he was a Blue Jay for a bit.
I think back to your point about the New York media. If Buxton comes to the Yankees, he's probably like fourth or fifth in the pecking order in terms of who the blame falls on when we lose. So, like, having a judge there to be the captain and basically shield everyone is definitely a big thing. And then, like we've already said, we've been glazing this guy for 20 minutes now. He's the superstar level player, but he doesn't need to be the guy that we rely on every single day to get the job done. So I think it's a perfect fit as long as he's willing to come to the city.
And I will welcome with open arms, and I will be pushing. I will be on the media thinks they'll be on the offensive against Buxton. No. I'll be on the offensive against the media that's against Buxton. There's the play there. I can go on the offensive now for these kinds of things. And I will say, though, Buxton seems like a great dude. That's like part of this for me. He seems like an awesome guy. And putting him on like a legitimate contender, I feel, I'm not saying he's going to get better and magically start being healthy. That's hogwash. That's baloney. It would be cool for him. You know, I want him as a baseball fan to go to a contender, not just the Yankees, just a contender, preferably not the Blue Jays or Red Sox, but you can go anywhere else. You know, you want to go be a Padre, go right ahead, please.
Dodgers.
The Dodgers. I don't know if I like hate them, so I don't care. I think if he goes to the Dodgers, I'll be upset. But like,
I hate Miguel Rojas.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll say it, and I hated him before the Jazz stuff came out. I always hated him. I thought he was a PR gimmick. Don't get me started on Miguel Rojas. And then he has the magic moment. Oh, great.
I don't forgive him, but I hate, he's not like number one on my non-off-field related stuff, like reasons why I don't like a player. He's not number one because of the home run. That home run pushed him to like 7 or 8 on the list.
No, the reason I don't like that is because I've been tweeting about him all year about how he's only on the roster for PR reasons, and then he actually has a big moment. I'm like, shit,
Like, my thought was, how is he hitting here? Why is he hitting here? And then he gets a home run. I'm glad I didn't tweet it out. I thought it fully, and I think I said it to numerous people. But any final thoughts on Byron Buxton before we move on? This becomes the Miguel Rojas hate show, and I dropped the wiffle ball. I apologize for that. Any final thoughts on Buxton, though?
Bring him here.
All right, so the final thing that is relevant, not the most relevant, but semi-relevant, is Tatsuya Imai will be posted on November 19th. That's this Wednesday. Now, this is coming out on Tuesday, even though we're recording on Monday, so kind of getting your timelines all put together if you're listening to this. Tatsuya Imai being posted means that he will have 45 days to sign with an MLB team. I'm pretty confident in saying he's the most linked to guy for the Yankees outside of Cody Bellinger, and the Cody Bellinger stuff is more, I think it makes sense for him to come back. Not even, I know for a fact he's coming back. We don't really even know what his market's going to look like yet. But in the case of Imai, I want you guys to give me out of 10, what your odds of the Yankees signing him are. Actually, let's just do 0 to 100%. That's just way simpler. 0 to 100% odds he ends up a Yankee. We'll start with Chris. Chris, give me your number here.
80%. 80%. Okay. And I have it at 7 for 160.
Okay.
I think both those numbers are pretty fair. I'd say probably maybe 65%. I don't know about 80. 80 is pretty high because we have no way of knowing whether or not he wants to be on the West Coast or what have you. But I think the contract number is also pretty fair, like somewhere in the mid-100s, somewhere around 150, 160. That's kind of similar to Tanaka's deal, right? Wasn't Tanaka 7 years, 140?
I think it was around that range, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was 150 maybe. But that's a number I'd give him. I'd actually try and give him the seventh year to just stretch out the AAV. I want that AAV to stay down. I'm using his youth for AAV luxury tax purposes. You know, I'm a big fan of dodging the luxury tax and dodging taxes in general for baseball purposes and trying to help with your luxury tax situation, not get into that Cohen threshold before you make other additions for your bullpen or whatever it may be. For Imai, I will give you I want to say a higher number than Chris, but I can't. I was going to go with around 60% as well. I think the Yankees are very motivated to get him. I think the West Coast, East Coast thing. So from my understanding, and I know Yankee source said this in an article as well, he's very tapped in on international free agent stuff. He mentioned that the East Coast, West Coast thing wasn't really going to be an issue. I tried and checked to check in and see kind of what that deal was, and that's pretty much in line with what I've been hearing of, like, oh yeah, East Coast, not really an issue for him. I also don't think his West Coast suitors are going to be that plentiful. It seems like it's really the Padres, and they have financial issues, so I don't know if they're... If we get outbid by the Padres, I'm going to be a little bit stunned. The threat I look at and go, ooh, are the Blue Jays, just because they're on our coast. Ify Mai is someone who just doesn't like the New York media. I mean, that's a variable. If he wants to be an international star for three countries, that's a thing that could appeal to him. I don't know. That's just me speculating. But I just think the Yankees are so motivated for one. Like, I think the Yankees aren't going to be in on Framber Valdez. The Blue Jays might be. The Yankees aren't going to be in on Dylan Cease, most likely. The Blue Jays might be. I think so many teams are going to have pivot points and players they're willing to go after. I think the Yankees are just laser-focused pitching-wise on MI. I don't – like, Sandy was the guy they were linked to at the deadline, but I don't think the logistics for the Marlins make much sense. And for the Yankees, maybe it makes sense, but I don't know. But for the Marlins, I mean, they have to be willing to trade the player. It just feels like Ify is the guy they're going to get. And it feels like that's the guy they want. And it feels like they're just upset they don't have – they're upset they don't have a Japanese star. Like, I think they're – I think people don't give – I think people rail on them too much for their pursuits of Japanese stars. I think they've really tried. It just hasn't worked their way, which happens. The Dodgers happen, you know?
Yeah, I think this definitely reminds me of the Tanaka sweepstakes from about, was it 10, 11 years ago now? Jesus Christ, we're getting old. But, I think
– I'm 21. We is a lot of people. I'm good. No, I'm just I don't remember like the specifics. I just remember the day he signed. That's my brain memory of it. Wow, I think I was 9 for that.
My God.
Yeah, I was in.
I made an Instagram post for him. I was like, the Yankees signed a Japanese pitcher.
I don't remember what I remember. I think I didn't have social media until I was in high school.
It was just my personal Instagram. I like got Instagram like a month before, so I was posting like every day.
Gotcha.
So I was like, the Yankees signed Masahiro Tanaka. He went 24-0 in for the Rakuten Golden Eagles. And all my 20 followers were like, oh, wow.
Those 20 followers got great content. I will say with Tatsuya Ymai, he's not an ace. I think we're all – he's not. If he's your number one starter, good luck. Something went wrong. But if the Yankees like him, I'm predisposed to believe there's something – like I'm going to believe there's something there. The questions are real about his repertoire, about his future, but we'll see there. I think, fun question related to this, because I've been pondering this. If you had to pick, the Yankees signed Cody Bellinger, they have Cody Bellinger, and it's between Buxton and Ymai. Who are you, who's your, like, Brian Cashman was like, I'm only getting one of them, not getting the other. If I get one, I'm not getting the other.
See you later, Ymai. Give me Buxton. Talk.
Yeah, all day. It's not even close for me either. It's not even close. I'm sorry. I'm taking Buxton all day.
Ryan, see you later. We'll get the next Japanese star.
Sure, we'll get Scoob. We'll get Scoobal next year. Yeah, I don't need a Mai. Give me Buxton.
You're telling me I could get what you said if we signed Belly? It'd be Belly, Buxton, Judge.
Oh, what a lineup, dude! What a lineup that would be.
I am willing. I'm willing to like buzz all my hair off for Buxton.
I'm going bald for Buxton. I'm not doing that shit.
If we get him?
Ryan,
me and you were in. I don't know if and that's baseball's in because he's
I'm
the
not going.
Buxton fan.
I'm not going bald for Buxton. You gotta understand.
Hey, you don't love Buxton.
You gotta understand with my genetics. If I shave this off, it might not come back.
I don't know if mine are coming back, but I will say you do have like my hair is not in a state where I can sit here and say like I need it badly like. My hair's not great.
Dude, I can't grow a beard. So if I go shaved head, I'd be cooked.
I think I'm the oldest out of all of us, though, so I'd probably run the risk of it not coming back.
I'll take the bullet for us. I'm the youngest. I'll take the bullet.
That's fair.
Bald for Buxton. I'm saying it now. If Byron Buxton's in New York,
that's not good.
I will shave my head.
Ryan, I'm sorry. And that's baseball is cooked. Your hair is good, dog. I wouldn't even take my hat off for a show, so you're good, dude.
Dude. I don't know, man. I'm not forcing anybody to do anything. I'm willing to do it though.
I'll do it with you. We'll leave in that space plot and we'll make fun of him for not having going.
Yeah, look at you with your good head of hair and your very well put together curls, that loser. Like, could you imagine that podcast episode? It's like, people like tune in who've never watched before. Listen, like, why are two of these people bald?
I'll say this: if I get a serious paycheck from this podcast, I'll fucking do that shit.
We want the eyebrows off first in that space ball.
Eyebrows, that might be.
Eyebrows gone. Keep the hair. Give us the eyebrows.
Dude, I cut off my eyebrows accidentally shaving because I could grow a unibrow. I'm not trying to have that. And somebody said I had the bat signal on my eyebrows because of the way it was cut. That was a rough day for me to go to middle school. We've gone sidetracking from Amai to Buxton to whether I will shave my head or not and who will be shaving their heads if we got Byron Buxton. Bald for Buxton's a thing. I think that's a thing. I think it works. But anywho, we appreciate you guys tuning in. If you guys enjoyed this podcast, make sure you like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell, and check out Fireside Yankees on all of your favorite social media platforms, whether that's Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, or, of course, this YouTube page. This will be available for download on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. For those who enjoy to take their – who prefer to take their podcast on the go, listen to it on audio, not watch the video. That's cool with me. And you can check out the personal work we all do. I have a YouTube channel that I'm not really sure I'm gonna link it. It's just my name, so like I feel like that just works. And that's baseball. We'll link his channel below, and we're gonna link Chris's stuff as well, both what he does at Menace to Sports and his personal page as well. We appreciate your guys' continued support. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Perfect.